Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Greetings, and welcome to Topically Yours on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. I am Deirdre Schuler, your host. And today, I have invited an author on to discuss her current book. Although fiction, it has many aspects within it that encompass the truth. It is a book that addresses an issue that has remained closeted for far too long. It is not a comfortable subject for many, since it will force them to examine their inner core, examine a behavior so deeply engaged in the subconscious it has practically become part of the DNA. My guest today, Kola Booth, has written a book with a subject matter so forbidden some publishers have refused to publish it in fear of provoking anger and spurring denials. Kola Booth has written an exotic tale, one that gives one room to ponder the ramifications of racism, subjugation, and the rage and self-denial it engenders within its victims. Boof makes one think in her tale of Eternity, our African heroine, who is proud of her jet-black skin, but finds most of her own are not. The issue rarely talked about is what we're going to discuss today, and that is why darker skin has been so villainized, not only by the oppressors, but by those the oppressors oppress. It seems the slave mentality is alive and well. The war strategy of divide and conquer has been a successful tool for those who have sought to conquer, control, and subjugate. Fictionalized or not, not only in America, but throughout the countries of color and European nations, this book will strike a nerve. Well, you know, in 1651, a Christian named John Theodosius Van Elder wrote a pamphlet, a portion of which said, "The white woman is the virtuous part of the Bible, the prize above rubies, the jewel of God's heart. Her hand is fair, but the black woman is the sex in the Bible. Thus everything about her is wicked." And when I spoke with Miss Booth earlier, she did tell me, based on that, she entitled her book, "The Sexy Part of the Bible." Now, during this show, we're going to delve into her thoughts behind her book. Miss Booth book is published by Akashic Books, and she is also the author of a short story, The Swallowers, upon which her current book is based. She has written Flesh and the Devil, and a collection of poems which include Nile River Woman. Born in Omdurman, Sudan, Miss Booth has lived in America for over 30 years now and presently lives in Southern California. Well, we have Kola Booth with us, so let's welcome her to the show. Welcome, Miss Booth. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Good morning. I'm fine.
I'm glad to hear you.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm
excited about the book. I want to explain that I've been in America for over 30 years. I am an adoptee. I was adopted by Black Americans and raised here. So just saying that off the top so people can understand why I'm not speaking with the accent. But I love the Arabic music at the beginning. It's Arab Sudanese. I love that.
Thank you. And I'm going to play a few other tunes throughout. And I mispronounced the name of that song, so let me correct that. It's Sudanese Ballad. And, I'm glad to hear you've been here almost 30 years, so because I was wondering if there was going to be an accent, but I actually don't hear any. But how did you come here? Did you come at obviously a very early age?
Well, my parents were murdered in Omdurman, Sudan, because my Egyptian father spoke out against slavery and genocide in what was happening in southern Sudan. My father was not Muslim, was not black, he was white Arab, and my mother was charcoal black. She was a Gisiwak Oromo who he had purchased when she was 14 years old. He had purchased my mother for marriage, and they were killed in my presence. UNICEF, Owen McCanus, took me to England.
Oh, not to interrupt you, but this book is primarily written with the viewpoint that darker skin is looked down upon, not only supported or encouraged by the oppressor, but the people that have been oppressed have also taken on that mindset that the darker skin tone is not beautiful, and therefore those that are darker are ostracized. Now, how is it viewed by the people in Sudan and of course other parts of the world that are people of color? What is your take on how they view their skin tones?
Continent Africa and the Ethiopian Jews are really from Sudan. Sudan is where the Falasha people come from. And the name of the woman was Shilungo. That's her real African name, is Shilungo. So, yes, that's a huge part of why this puzzle needs to be put together for us so that we can teach our children better to love themselves and to not be ashamed to be dark-skinned or any of us should not, you know, look at it as a negative thing.
Absolutely. Well, even according to the Bible, Jesus Christ was black. I mean, they describe him as having skin the color of brass, and that certainly is not white, and hair as lamb's wool, and everybody knows who has the lamb's wool.
Exactly.
They can make him as fair as they like, but the Bible itself says who he was. Now,
go ahead.
No, go ahead, because I was just going to say that has always sort of been a state, there has always been a state of hypocrisy in the way European history has depicted the peoples of color.
Right.
You know,
as
always, the conqueror always writes his story.
Right. I agree with you. I don't see, though, that white people as much it's black people who really are not ready to talk about this subject in many ways, like I was saying earlier, because so many black people are what they call color struck. even in my own family, there are certain women who would make comments like, you know, I would like a grandchild with good hair. And so when we start to talk about this issue, it becomes very difficult for many black people to even openly acknowledge and discuss it. Even they want Jesus to be white. You know what I'm saying? They want all the heroes in the stories to be white. They cannot, you know, we talk all the time that we come from Mother Africa. And yet and still, they are not willing to notice that she was as black as night. I mean, the blackest black woman is the beginning of Africa, Aslinala. The Ethiopian word Asli literally means the blackest woman. And so, you know, yeah, and we don't, it's like we don't make the connection. You know, we want to look like white people but call ourselves black. And so it's a very sticky situation because people feel alienated once you start discussing this topic of what about loving our actual blackness, not just the culture but the actual skin and hair texture. Then it has become, amongst blacks, it becomes very alienating for many people. They just feel overwhelmed.
Well, do you think that's part of the well, in America, it started, I guess, with the White Man's Manifesto, wherein he taught the slavers how to enslave not only the body but the mind, and that was to go on
exactly.
for several hundreds of years. And wherever
that's
one
exactly
colonized,
is.
That same
yes.
that same teaching
yes.
has been taught throughout, not only
everywhere,
in Africa,
right,
but
exactly.
India and you name it, everywhere. Wherever
right.
there's a people
exactly.
of color. And that
my
has
Arab
really
father told
played
me,
their mind.
Yes. My Arab father told me that the world's only true religion is white supremacy. He said everything else is just a decoy to hide that fact. But he said the world's only true religion from Asia to the Arab world to everywhere. Because in the Arab world, same, I was born in Omdurman, Sudan, a Sunni Muslim, and there were only three blacks in our whole school. And we were taught that black men grow tails, and we were taught that Allah loves white people more. And
oh
so,
goodness.
You know,
even in the
is,
Arab
yeah,
culture?
It's everywhere we're taught. What
isn't that
saying?
Awful?
It
well,
is,
don't you think
that
isn't it
like,
interesting that
everywhere.
Is I find it interesting that wherever the whatever country the oppressor chose to oppress, he sent his missionaries ahead.
Right.
Now, isn't
one thing about the Europeans is that they are geniuses. I mean, they're extremely brilliant at warfare and conquering and
mm-hmm.
stealing. They're brilliant at those things. And so I kind of, because I'm African, I admire it more than African Americans do. African Americans tend to take a moral look at everything. They look at things morally, whereas people from Africa, we are conquerors. We have conquered other tribes. And so in our mind, we look at it more as a warfare kind of thing. And we admire some of, even though we are the victims, we admire some of the things because they won. That's the whole, you know, the thing is we are the ones doing the serving and doing everything. It would be good if we could develop some usage, for instance, the way the media is used, it would be good if blacks would become so sophisticated and understand how important images are. Because like music videos, you have these black men in these music videos surrounded by white women, and that message is going to our children 24 hours a day that we should breed out and that, you know, it's better to be white and all this. And so we're doing their own bidding for them. It's like we're on automatic self-destruct. And so you have to
I find
that,
admire that
they
that's quite interesting.
Hate yourself.
Now,
hello?
you talk about the Michael Jackson pill in
right.
in the book, and you name these people the swallowers. And
right.
it's basically
right.
what they're doing is taking that pill to lighten their and bleach their skin, but it's also slowly poisoning them.
Right.
And I find that that's kind of interesting. It's a metaphor because by the way we behave towards one another, we are slowly being poisoned too by this need, this desire, this whiteness to be white. Whether we're taking the pill or not, we're taking a subliminal pill.
Exactly. It's very sad. It's very sad. But I'm glad that you're open to talking about this. There are some radio hosts, believe it or not, who just don't think that this issue, they call it dirty laundry. And they're like, you know, well, this doesn't, there's a bookstore who's banned the book. And, what'd you say?
I said, get out.
I mean, it's, right, it's just sad that people would rather ignore it than let, you know, I have two sons who are going to be black men. And I just want them to love themselves. I don't want them to look at other black people and be ashamed, or I just think it defeats them from the get-go that no matter what you do in life, if you cannot respect your own humanity, your own people's humanity, it doesn't matter what you achieve because you're nothing anyway, in my mind. I mean, it's meaningless for my son to become a millionaire and have a white wife and be ashamed of Africa and me. And I think of Anwar Sadat, who was the president of Egypt, who was just like me. He was half white Arab, half Sudanese. And he refused to put his Sudanese mother's picture in the Hall of President's Mothers. Every president of Egypt has their mother up there but him. And that just is what I don't want. I don't want my son to be like that. And so many black American women are now faced with the same thing going on where, you know, we have given into this thing. It's not on purpose that we've given into self-hatred and all these beliefs, but it's just that we did not really recognize what had happened to us, both in slavery and being colonized. And I was raised by black Americans, so I am really a hybrid. I have incredible background in Africa and then raised with black American history as well, firsthand, to the point that I feel black American. And so I just feel that this is a conversation as mothers that we need to start having about this. We really don't want our children to not exist. I don't. When I see Tiger Woods and then I see the next generation of his children, there's nothing left of us. When I see these children,
Tiger seems to be in somewhat of a denial there too.
Oh yeah.
You know,
it's so painful. How do we admit it?
Well, I
used to perm my hair, and I was so self-hating and just did not realize. And so at first I used to fight people and say, you know, I just, you know, want to have blue contacts because it's in style. And this is when I was very young, Deirdre. And so now I have gotten to where I'm able to admit, no, you wanted those things because you feel that black men will pay you more attention if you look more European. And you have come to not like yourself because, you know, people don't react to black women the way other women. They don't smile at us as much. They are not, you know, we're accused of having bad attitudes when what it really is, we're treated differently from other women. We're not even treated like women in many cases. And so
Tara Banks had a show where she had all the races of men and all the races of women, and she asked each race to pick what they thought was the most beautiful. And the African-American women were not even voted for, even by the African-American men.
Right.
And they sat there looking so embarrassed. And if I had been a black American man, I would have been ashamed of myself, but they didn't seem to.
Oh, no. They weren't. Oh, our men don't love us. I mean, I know that's hard for some women to hear and take, and a lot of African Americans especially don't. Right. They're going to say, oh, you have to say some. But the ones who do love us are so not vocal. They don't make themselves heard. They are not out there. I mean, if it were me as a black woman and everyone was saying they don't love black men, I would be out there screaming to the rooftops that I love black men. I would be shouting it that, look, the children of my father is a wonderful black man. And I wouldn't be making myself heard. Well, the good black men do not make themselves heard. And so we need to really look at this. There is a major problem going on, and black men, we're not allowed to call them out. And so the silence is killing us. Like Audre Lorde said, our silence will not save us. And that's another reason I wrote the book, Diarja, because I just felt, you know, we've got to get out there and do it. We've got to start not participating in the way that we are viewed, and we also have to stop letting them call us bitter and evil and all these stereotypes and lies that are made up about black women just because everyone has decided that we go on the bottom.
Well, the black race in general, when initially
right.
They call us primitive, but the primo means first,
right.
original.
Exactly.
And we
right.
are the first and original people who obviously had culture. We had the library of Alexandria, and they make it sound like we did nothing in history. But we were the Dark Ages came from Africans coming to Europe and bringing culture. They like to cover all that up, but we were the ones. And Hannibal, they never tell you in school Hannibal was a black man. But all of those things that the history has been rewritten to suit another race, and especially a race that does not even like its own color because they're the fastest one. They'll beat you to the beach.
Well, exactly.
And they all say you look better with a tan. So what are you? Are you a white person or a brown person? Because if a black person is black with 1 in 28% black blood, then is a white person any longer a white if he's in the beach getting a tan? I mean, the it's ludicrous.
Well, for Africans, it's even more complicated because we don't have the one-drop rule. So it becomes more, you know what I'm saying? Because, see, we also don't consider mixed people who are very mixed to be black. And so that becomes an even bigger pain. It's harder because now so many of us are mixed. And
especially me. I suffer with that all the time. That I work with a lot of Africans from Ethiopia, Nigeria, Niger, Rwanda, South Africa, and you know what they tell me? Why do you African Americans think you're African? Why do you call yourselves African American? You're not African. I said, well, what about our ancestry? They said, forget about that. You've been in America too long. You're not even part of us. So then that leaves African Americans sitting there saying, well, where do we belong?
Right. I'm sure it is. That's what I'm saying. It's a terrible division. That it's just painful. It's just hard.
And even in your book, it depicts
unity.
That somewhat.
Yes, definitely. Well, I have to show Africa. And so it shows it just how it is. I mean, the feeling is that Africans are like Europeans, really. You know, African people are really like Europeans as far as blood rules and things like that. I think the one-drop rule has hurt black Americans terribly, but that was the intention.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that they wanted them to have it was so that they would keep breeding out. And even after slavery ended, well, the book The Black or the Berry by Wallace Thurman, as documented in that era, when slavery ended, the vast majority of black Americans were blue-black. They were not like 20 million mulatto and all that. It was really back then. And they deliberately continued the system that they had for 400 years on the slave plantation. But why wouldn't they? After 400 years being taught that light is better and to breed lighter, why wouldn't they come out free now and continue that process? But that's what Africans are really addressing when they say that, because Africans do consider most black Americans to be at least black, even if they may not think of them as African. They at least think most of them are black. But the mixing is a prize to Africans. And that's what I'm saying. The idea that one thing in the book is that we're just mixed, or we can become. For us who are African, we're no longer African or black once we get too mixed. And so now that's really where this, I think it's what makes us fight first against. Because a lot of African Americans don't even want to discuss this. The women do, but the men want to pretend that it's not going on. And the only reason they can pretend that is they have lost contact with Africa. Because
well,
how
you
do
find
you
the
want
same
to,
attitude
like
in the Caribbean West Indian culture as well?
Right.
That desire to
bleach
their skin and see themselves as
exactly.
other than a black race. Not all, of course, but I've come across some.
Not for men either. No, I'm not saying.
Pardon me?
Realizing about the problem. No, I was saying not all African Americans are that way either. I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that not everybody who's, because many Black Americans are proud to be Black. You know.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying we're generalizing that. It is just hard to get the men to admit that this is going on because they, once they do, they have to do something about it. And that's what they don't want. They don't want to confront this because it really points a finger at them. You know,
well,
how
don't you think
you,
behind most movements have been women? I mean, Nelson Mandela, for example, gets all the credit, but Winnie's the one that pushed the movement.
No, you're 100% right. And Winnie is the one who's respected in South Africa, not him. I mean, it's just like...
Well, actually, Winnie
you know
is
how,
not anymore. They disrespect her.
Well, no, I'm saying the masses of people, not the government, but the people of South Africa love her more than him. You could go there and take a straw poll. He is seen the way... So it's like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. Malcolm X is who the Black American people most... They're much more passionate about him, actually, than Martin Luther King. The white hold up Martin Luther King. And it's the same way in South Africa. The people of South Africa overwhelmingly love Winnie Mandela. I mean, if you go to the African continent and actually walk amongst the poorest people, they see her as just being, you know, slandered by all the court allegations. And, you know, they still call her Mama Winnie. She's still exceptionally popular. But you're right. Women always start the movements. We always do,
yes,
which is why I wrote this book.
And we never get the praise for it. We're always sort of kept behind. And I noticed that even in your book, the character Eternity, who was originally Orisha. Now, that I find interesting because the Orishas are really deities, and that character would have basically been almost like a Jesus Christ arose from the dead through
well,
her
people body. Have that name, though. I mean, it's a name that people take, just like Americans call themselves Mary.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, I did, though, want her to have a holy name that would mean something to West African people. You know, that Orisha, your goddess, is against the skin bleaching is what I was trying to say. You know, this is your ancestor. You know, I did want to have that. But at the same time, it's just a name as well that some West African people have, you know.
But your book, Orisha, is really the original Eternity.
Right. Exactly. That's what I'm saying for that country. And we all have a different Orisha in each African country. Black America is an African country. Not saying Black America as a unique and Captain is Orisha. Sojourner Truth is Orisha. You know, those women who I call Queen Harriet Tubman and Queen Sojourner Truth is what I call them. But we all have our fighters and our mothers and lovers, and women are just, like you said, the backbone of everything, Deirdre. Women are the start. I mean, like you said, if Harriet hadn't done her thing and Sojourner, Frederick Douglass really got so much of his oomph from those women. And those women were the ones who went out there and were saying, this has to change. We cannot remain in slavery. So I hope that we can start having Black women say, we just cannot have our children continue thinking this way. And I'm hoping that...
I agree.
Right. You know, I'm not perfect at all, and I don't consider myself to be an expert or God or anything, but I just wrote from my heart because I am a girl who was put up for adoption by her Egyptian grandmother for being dark-skinned. So I just felt you have been picked. Since this is so passionate within you, you need to write about this and do it from the other perspective, you know, not the world perspective, but you need to go against the world for a minute here. And I have to tell you, Deirdre, it's so scary because, you know, it's whenever you buck the status quo, oh, my God, I just have felt so, you can hear it in my voice. I don't even sound like myself lately because the attacks have been, even from Black women, you get, why are you bringing that up? Why are you writing that? Why are you talking about that? And like I said, I have two sons, two black sons who will one day be black men. I live in California, the interracial capital. And I don't want my sons to look at their people or their skin or Africa and be ashamed. So I wrote the second book.
You're not saying to your sons, be anti-interracial.
Oh,
you're saying be proud
definitely
of who
not,
you are.
Definitely not, because I've been with white men. Right, definitely not, because I've dated white men. I lived with a white man in Fairfax, Virginia for 5 years. I'm definitely not saying that. I've been with celebrity white men, like Gerard Butler, the actor. I've dated him, so I'm not saying that. But what I do teach my sons is the African value of just the tribe, the blood berry, the clan. The thing is that what is most valuable to us is that we give birth to our own image. And so it's not a thing of not loving other races, because we love all human beings. All human beings are dear to us. But we put ourselves first, just the way they do, because this is what white people and every other normal group of people do. Chinese, Indian, all people put themselves first as their collective group. Then they are friendly. Then they give love to outsiders. And that is what I teach my sons, is that as them as black men, I want to see them give birth to their own image. Now, if they fall in love with a white woman, I will really believe it has to be love, true love, because they have been raised that I am expecting them. You know, I am their mother. I am an Oromo. That is my tribe. I am an Oromo. That's the part I claim. I don't claim my father's Arab half. So I want my sons to continue my way as an Oromo. We are against no one. We love all human beings, and I definitely expect my sons, if someone was in trouble or their life in danger, no matter what race they are, our God demands that we save and help any human being, because under the skin, we're all brothers and sisters anyway. I mean, I definitely also believe that. You know what I'm saying?
I see it as a flower garden. If God created the flowers, why can't they all be any color, you know, the colors that God created? And it's a joke that a racist will love his black dog, yet he can't love black color in his own species. I mean, it totally makes no sense at all. But I want to ask you about, well, two characters, the male characters. One, Stevedore. Now, Stevedore sets himself up almost like a godlike figure, because he can create, he can bring out of the dead life. You want to talk about that?
Well, white men have this history, and I did this with both the male white characters, of always wanting to go someplace that they don't belong and take over and make it in their own image. Africans are also that way. Our men are that way too, but not to such an obsessive, I don't know, it's just a god thing they
complex.
Have where they think they are God, right? It's a God complex that I wanted to touch on and have it say it out loud, that, you know, why are you doing this around? Because after Stevedore, you know, in the novel, it continues with James Lord. And I portray them as both good and bad, not totally just bad people. In their heart, good. But a lot of hurt and pain is being caused because they don't understand that some things are just not in their realm. It's not right. You know, it's not right for us to clone people. Who are we to be doing this and doing it for body parts and, you know, raping this? Because that's what Stevedore is doing, whether he recognizes it or not, and his wife by extension. You know, and this is just what I wanted to show, what these missionaries have done in Africa. I used an updated model by using scientists. But it's the same thing. They love to send these either scientists or missionaries there to brainwash us, to decode us, to sexually penetrate us and get in us and just do all kind of, you know, and it just, you know, it was the best way that I could tell it that it would get published, you know, because you also have to make it through the editors and, you know, but I know every black person, especially black women, will pick up on that whole God.
And religion is so sacrosanct. I mean, you know, who worships more the God that the white race gave us than black people?
Right, exactly. You're right.
And we're worshiping a war god or a god that they gave us that in many ways it was not a living god, that Africans had their own living gods whom they related to
I was just about to say that on our half of Africa, it's the Arabs and everything Arab and Islamic and Muslim. I mean, they've given us, you know, it was illegal for my father and I to eat breakfast together when I was little in Sudan because a father cannot eat with his daughter. And, I mean, stuff like that. And I watched a woman be burned in the middle of the street. I mean, rolled up in a carpet, Deirdre, because she didn't give birth to any sons. She had six girls in a row. And her husband and his brothers poured gasoline all over the carpet with her in it and set it on fire and killed this woman. Yeah, and I mean, all the children of our sector, of our covenant, saw that. And I'm thinking, this is the example. You have your little sons beating with their own mother with sticks in the Muslim. This is not African. This was not ours. This was brought and forced on us by outside invaders. And so just like you just said, it just is so sad that we take it harder. When we put on their religions, we go deeper than they ever went with it. You know, we become the expert at being Christian or the expert at being Muslim. Right.
And not just Muslim. You can find the same thing in Christianity. I mean, it's the religions in general. That religions in general are an oppressant in many ways now. People will get angry with you and kill you. Even kill you for speaking against it. But in the end, I believe that the divine does exist, but does not have to be in a church. Why should the divine be regulated to one day on a Sunday when the divine is in your heart every day and it's who you are? You are part of that.
Yeah.
We're taught. Actually, to me, it's just another tool to control. And I'm not saying
that
there is not a deity, because there is, I believe.
No, I agree. It's a control mechanism. It's done for that reason, to control human masses of people, millions, you know. And also it has been very bad for us because it keeps us submissive at times when it would be better for us to fight back. Even in Islam, where they say, you know, you can kill someone who killed yours, it's still very submissive. Women and children, to me, just do not belong in Islam because I was born in it. I was raised in it, so I know. And I'm talking the real Islam. You know, many Americans practice a version of Islam that I would feel different that way. But to be raised where it's illegal for me and my father to eat together, and I'm his only child. He doesn't have a son. And he made me a tomboy. I mean, I was shooting guns at age 5. We used to hunt crocodiles, get the teeth, you know, do all these things. He taught me how to build boats out of cassava and do all kind of things. And so, you know, I was a big
tomboy. He did this so
he
could spend time with you?
Yes. He did it because of that. And also he didn't have any boys. He had wanted boys, but I was the only kid that came that wasn't born stillborn. And so he just did everything with me, and it hurts to know that we had to do all these things in secret, you know, that everything had to be, it was so dirty, it was made to feel, and, you know, he was just being a father, that's all he was doing. But my father also was someone who, he loathed Islam, even though he was a Muslim who worked, and you know, you wouldn't know it, but my father had many problems. He was a heroin addict. He felt he was black was probably the biggest problem he had, was that he felt that Arab people, his color, are black. And my father was like an olive color. He was like the color of, I don't know, John Turturro or Omar Sharif. You know, he had that kind of a coloring. So, of course, in Africa, the Africans would not accept him as black, but he felt he was a black man. And he always told me that was, you know, he felt he was black and that, you know, he just had to go along with the power structure of Islam and all these things. But, I mean, in our home, he played Frank Sinatra records and Patsy Cline records, which is just against the whole Sunni Muslim everything. And so,
well, don't
you know,
you think
and he loved
that
black
the black race encompasses all colors from the blue-black to ivory white, that we're the only race.
Well, no, of
that
course,
has
African
all the colors of mankind.
That way. Africans.
Well, they weren't raised that way, but the reality
that's a Western.
Is that
well,
but
they
just
will
to look and
it.
See
Western,
that we have all the colors.
It's a slave thing, though. What I'm saying is that whole idea that everybody can be black is really from slavery. It's not from us. So, even my father felt that way. He wanted it to be that way. But I'm just saying the reality was amongst African people, because no tribe believes that. None of them. Our whole goal is to be African. That just like the European.
Yes, but there's 56 countries in Africa. And in Africa, I've met several peoples from Africa in different countries. And they're all kinds of colors. That's
but
what
they
I'm
don't consider
that.
Themselves black. They don't. They may be all kinds of colors, but they're Berbers, they're Arabs, they're Creole. They do not consider themselves black just because
what
they're
do they consider
Africa.
Themselves?
They consider themselves to be Berber, Creole, you know, whatever name they've put to
so you're saying
their
they
coloring.
Don't distinguish themselves by color. Is that what you're saying?
Black Africans consider themselves to be the authentic Africans, the real ones. The other ones are mixed. The Berbers, the Creole, all those people are mixed from outsiders. And so they consider themselves to be of a mixed race caste. They call it half caste. Of course, the North Africans will kill you if you call them black because they don't want to be black. They don't want to be categorized as black.
What do
so
they want to be categorized if they're not white?
Well, no, actually in like Egypt and Sudan, on their driver's license, they are white. My father was white, even though to you they're not white. In their countries, they do call themselves white on their, you know, cards and things like that. The white supremacy is there just like it is here. They're
of
just
course.
White version. It's the same in Argentina or Brazil. Even there, those mm-hmm. people aren't really white either. They're claimed as white. Have you ever met the Latinos? And they're not really white people. But to them, they are white. And the ones that are darker are the niggers. That's basically
because of the slave mentality.
Well, it's not from slavery. It's really from the rejection of being called white. I mean, being called black when you're not fully black. Comes from actually the people that were before, you know, for instance, your slave ancestors in America would not accept the one drop rule, the people that were first brought here. That is something that they never had. It had to be bred into black Americans through slavery. They had to be made mm-hmm. to accept that because Africans would not accept that. It's a major insult to say that Mariah Carey is a black woman. That's a major insult because she's not us. She doesn't represent us. That's how they will look at it. She does not. What is it that makes her black? Nothing. Because the question is, are the ancestors showing? When you're born, that's the question that
her
happens.
Heritage makes her color may not
well,
make her black, but
of
her
course
heritage
not. But see, the color is everything. If the ancestors are not showing, that's the question. Are the ancestors showing that they ask when mixed children are born? And if they look black, then they're black. If they don't look black enough, then they're not going to accept them as black. And it's just the way, I don't want to change Africa for Europe, because Europe is the one who made the one drop rule. They're the ones who said anyone can be black, just anyone, because it gives them power, and it takes power from black people. Like I was just saying, Mariah Carey, it's unfair to black women to have her be the representative of black women, because where are their that means we're invisible now. What about her that looks like black women? Where is our beauty represented? Where is our skin color? Where is our tone? That is how black women will react to that, or should react. Because a white woman is not going to let a black woman represent whiteness. Would white women sit there and say, you know, Diana Ross is a beautiful white woman. You know, she represents our whiteness. No, no. You know,
but they're not
going to
say the same for Mariah either. They're not going to say Mariah represents our whiteness.
No, they aren't, but she does actually. She looks just like them. I mean, she has their exact hair, their skin tone, everything.
But she's not from them. Well, so it's almost like you're saying
her mother,
that these
wait, her mother's
are,
German.
Where do
her
they belong then?
German. Her mother's German. So
my
she is actually,
German.
Well, then actually she is, she can claim part of them. That's their racism when they make that lie. That's a lie because even Africans claim people who have African blood. We just don't call them black. But we definitely, for instance, a good example is Barack Obama, the president, who is a hero in Africa. He is not considered black. He wrote in his own autobiography, his own tribe, the Luo tribe, told him, you are Kenyan, you are African, you are Luo, but you are not a black man. And that's in his own book. And he accepts that and understands that. He can never only be black because he is half European. He's half of something else. He's not completely African. And so, you know, I just cannot accept, I can't stand on the side of let's force Africans now to adopt the one drop rule. Because to me that gives white people too much power. It's too much of a victory for them over black people.
So are the mixed race now a new race altogether? Because if they're not being accepted by white and they're not being accepted by the African, then where do they belong?
In reality, they are. Just like the Arabs and the Latinos were once a new race and the Gypsies, all of these different people are from mixed breeding. And so in reality, mixed race people are a new race. But the thing is that they are closely intertwined. Like in Africa, mixed race people are part of their African family. They are involved in their African culture. They are, you know, they just don't consider themselves black, and their families don't. Probably in Africa, if you have a baby that comes out looking red, they call the baby red, like the red Oromo people. They will say the baby's red, the baby's yam, which means yellow. Everyone is called by what they. The goal is to look like black, and that is the goal for African people. I don't think it's fair to teach to go and make it to become yam or, you know, mixed, because then that defeats the African people. It's like, okay, we had slavery, now we're just going to outright make these people extinct. And that's what people don't look at. Why can't we look at the blackness and put the blackness first? And people who are mixed can always become blacker. I mean, it takes only one generation for us to become blacker. I married a dark-skinned black man to have black children for that very reason. And I know most of my friends who are very, very light-complected, and I have friends almost Mariah's color who are just like me. They're like, Kola, I wanted to go back darker. I wanted to get with a man who would restore rather than take away. So that's all I'm saying is here is that with Africa, I think we should leave it the way it is as far as our idea of identity is more to restore our blackness than to get rid of it, because these men like Tiger Woods and so many men, even O.J. Simpson, whose last two children look nothing like black people, I don't think that should be our goal, to look Hawaiian or Filipino or, you know, that's what it becomes once you say anybody can be black. Then what is blackness for?
Well, let me also, I want to mention that you've been named 40 influential, among 40 influential black female authors by the AOL Black Voices. So I wanted to give you that kudo. And
you're so kind. I hope this interview is not upsetting to everyone. I feel so bad in a way because I hate to get on some of the issues of, you know, I just answer very honestly. But
yeah, I like it myself because it's something that you don't talk about and we need to talk about. And at some point, people have to be brave enough to say it. I'll have you back if you agree to come back and we'll talk again.
I would. And I just want to thank you because you're brave to have this issue talked about so openly. I mean, you haven't once said, well, Kola, we just aren't going to go there. So I
know we're
going
to go to every nook and corner because we need to go there.
Right. I think so. And I just feel so much love from you. I just feel so grateful that you care about us so much that you're like, you know what, Kola's right. We need to go into this, and we need to, you know, like I said, all colors of us who are black people, wherever we are in the world, need to be able to love ourselves. And we need
That's what I'm saying, all colors of us. Because, you know, I came from I call it a crazy mixed-up colored family where I'm really like a Neapolitan ice cream because I have my chocolate from my mother's side, and her mother was Native American, her father black, and my father German. And so I've seen all sides, and I grew up in a white neighborhood,
right.
And I saw all that racism and ignorance and stupidity against people of color.
Right.
And then I come to New York and I see, meet black people and I'm like, oh, wow, finally I can talk to them and they're racist too. And we don't
want
to talk about that, being racist against one another.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, it's definitely true. But I'm so glad you're strong and I think you're beautiful and I think that you're doing everything for your people. I mean, you're doing so much for us, fighting for us. It's like we can't go back now, Deirdre. I'm half Arab. I mean, and in my country, see, I don't suffer here because I look black to black Americans. But in my country, that's a huge deal. If you look at other Sudanese and then put my picture next to them, you will see I'm like 30 shades lighter. And so I definitely know exactly what you're talking about. I have been through it in my country. And we cannot go back now. We are now mixed so much. That's what I was saying, is that I don't want to force Africa to accept these European rules about color and all that. I respect that Africa wants to be African, and I hope that it can remain because I want to be more African. But at the same time, you and I have to just do the work we do, make our kids the best we can, you know, bring them up the best we can, and love ourselves no matter what. We have to love ourselves. You are a queen in my eyes. And so that is what we have to do. Just the fact that you're open to having this discussion and so much history that you have talked about to me shows me that you are a true queen. So that's all that you have to do, is just stand on that. And we can't really worry about the billions because we can't, you know, the only thing we can do, like I said, is make our children better and make them understand what happened to us. You know, our people have been so degraded and abused, and we just have to find a way to come together and unite and to be strong.
Well, you know,
so
what
I look at
the white man as using a war strategy. Basically, the manifesto was a war strategy. And that strategy of divide and conquer has really worked.
Exactly.
And it's been centuries. So how do we overcome it? Because it's so ingrained. It's almost I had a conversation yesterday with a black man who told me that it's so frustrating that he feels that it's become part of the black. And I say, when I say black, I mean all the peoples of color, their DNA.
Yeah.
That kind of a mindset, that racism, that, as I call it, slave mentality,
exactly,
whether you're a slave
or not. It's so hard to explain. It's like at some point we need to chop off our own arm almost in a way to get rid of this virus that these people have put. That is, it divides us. Constantly it mutates and divides us because we don't get better from it. We're getting weaker. Every generation we're getting more and more weak. We're becoming more and more confused, I notice. We lose touch more and more with, I guess, the darkness. You could say
our identity in general.
Right. Right.
We don't even come together collectively on anything, and this is disheartening that we work against one another instead of with one another. And I just don't know how we can overcome it. What we can do, because there's too much anger, too much self hatred. It's almost
you know.
If you believe in the Bible's part where it said the Jews wandered 40 years into the desert, it was like they wandered there just to get rid of this generation of slaves. But we never got the chance to wander anywhere or go anywhere because it's been one oppression after another. It may have changed in scope, but it's the same thing.
Exactly. It's terrible. And, you know, Randall Robinson, he, don't know if you know him, but he's a writer. And he was saying that in order to have unity, we must have uniformity. And coming from an African tribe, I'm such a big believer in that, because he was saying he moved to the West Indies, and he was saying they have a uniformity of color that he believes makes them more unified. Well, I have experienced that in different countries in Africa. The fact that the people have less coloring, meaning that they come in less shades. It's like a family usually is all the same color or very close, and the whole tribe is. I really do believe he's onto something with his, you know, he wrote in that book about him giving up on America, that, you know, that's one thing he, and, you know, he's kind of lighter skinned, and he was saying that he really, that has been a big thing that has disunified us, is that we now come in like 50 shades. And it is hard to have unity when you don't look alike, when you don't trust each other, when you're treated differently based on these different shades. And so that was his solution, was saying we need to come back to being brown. Let's just be all, you know, the way that we were. That will unify us. Now, that was what he said. I'm not saying that I totally believe that that's possible or that it would work. But I'm just saying that I have noticed that cultures where I, like my mother's tribe, the Oromo, I do notice that the fact that they all look alike and they all are basically within a same color range seems to make them have an like a more instant unity. It's like unbreakable almost. If you do something to one of them, they all are instantly touched by it. And we don't have that in America. We don't. We don't have it in America.
We work against one another, as I said, and,
right.
and jealous and envious, and it's just, as I say, that white man's manifesto thing has really got us in every way, physically, mentally, emotionally, and I don't know, maybe we need a great flood to wipe us all out and start again. I think of how we're going to
solve
it. You
sound like my father.
Like whom?
Father always said that. My African-American father always made that comment that we just need to do like Moxie Tomb or whoever that is. He's like, we need to do like Moxie Tomb and just wipe everybody out and start over.
Well, it seems so deeply entrenched.
Right.
That, as you say, that I would think that your book is refreshing, and you're saying that they're banning your book. I mean, how primitive is that?
Some places are. Esteban Books is store in Los Angeles that has banned the book. And, I mean, there are just some people who feel so attacked by this subject for us to even talk about it. And I think we as mothers, though, like I said, it's going to be the women that raise our children differently and to just give more love. Like Toni Morrison said, when your child walks in the room, no matter what color or shade or whatever your child is, smile at your child. Give your child the feeling that they are the greatest thing on earth. We all need to start doing this as black mothers. Stop calling our kids nappy-headed. Stop saying things like, bring your black nappy-headed self over here.
Mm-hmm. Or that person has good hair. What the heck is good hair?
Right. Stop saying good hair. Or stop telling, like in my book, Flesh and the Devil, I had a storyline where the leading girl was extremely light-skinned with green eyes, and her mother, who was also light-skinned, abused her but was very loving to the two dark-skinned children. And that was a twist. Everybody was like, wow, I've never seen that story before. But I said, what I wanted to show is that, because I had a friend in Washington, D.C., who was very light-skinned, and her mother seemed to have she didn't hit her like in my book, but she seemed to just, like, buy things for the dark kids all the time. And the daughter, who looked sort of mixed, she blamed her. It was like she had a thing against her. And so I wanted to show that in the book Flesh and the Devil. That was what, you know, a huge part of that book. For people who read it, they'll know what I'm talking about. But it's the same thing. We should not be calling people yellow bees, you know, the B word, and yellow this and...
Mm-hmm.
We need to stop that.
Well,
language.
From my perspective as a fair-skinned person, I have women come up to me and they show me hate, and I don't even know them.
Right, exactly.
And some of my own fellow peers, writers, there's a West Indian writer that she treats me like I did something to her, and I have never done anything to her, but the hate comes out of her towards me, which is unbelievable. And she's not... no one's as extreme as her, but you feel that the division.
Exactly.
Because
it becomes, right, it's terrible. It's just, that's what I'm saying.
It's assumption, because there's a dark-skinned woman walked up to me and said, you light-skinned girls get treated better. And that's not necessarily true. And I told her, where do you get that idea? She said, well, you're always treated better. I said, you know what? Have you ever thought of it as the white person keeps their enemy closest? Because they're terrified of a light-skinned person, because that person is who they are, or who they see themselves in that person and say, wow, I mean, I could be a black person. I mean, because frankly, if you believe in the scientists, everybody comes from Africa. The whites are just the trickle-down theory.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we believe that. We definitely believe
that. That is true.
Yeah,
the DNA comes out of Africa. The whites are just the last group. They're the youngest race on the planet.
Exactly. Oh, definitely.
And they are us too.
Exactly. Africans believe that. We believe everyone came from us. I'm just saying they may not think everyone's black, but they definitely believe everyone came from Africa. They may not claim them as their children, but they know that they came from there. You know.
Exactly. They know
that,
but they try to pretend they don't. But even, I mean, how much DNA?
Invading. You know, when they see it now as they're the invade, like China. We know the Chinese came from Africa. They're very Sudanese. They even eat. You know, they stole our way of eating, our music, everything in China. But we also know them as invaders, not to be trusted. You know, so much time has passed. You don't know your family. We can't be at each other's throats and at each other's, because if one falls, we all go down. And I really am a big believer in that. I think I see so many signs that. Right. Everyone said it was the most beautifully written thing. They just were scared of the, you know, everyone felt I was putting down the white race. But finally, this publisher at Akashic was like, you know, even though they didn't agree with everything in it, they said she needs to be heard. So
exactly.
I agree. I think it's an important book for black people, and I hope that people will get it and read it.
I don't think it should be thought of as putting down the white race to uplift the black race.
Exactly. I know. But see, you know how white publishers, you know, many of them think, you know,
they
got to
get over that.
Writing what they were. Exactly.
And because they have to get over that right now, because especially in America, although they say that they're the majority, we can all look around and see that's not the case.
Definitely. I know.
And on that note,
I
again want to thank you.
You can hang up. And I just thank you so much, Deardra. And like I said, call me if you need to do it over. I will be more than willing to do it again.
Okay. Thank you. And I'll let you know. And this is the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, and we've been talking to Kola Booth, a very, very interesting subject matter. We've been all over the scope, but I think it's been a subject, and I think many of you people will agree that it's something that we need to be talking about, because you can't hide things in the closet forever. Eventually, as they say, the light must hit all things. In order to bring things to the light, you heal it that way, and so we're working on a healing today through this show. And I want to thank my audience for making my topic topically yours. And again, thank you, Kola Booth. And you know what? We're going to end the show with Sudanese Dance by X Culture, One World Beat.
You've been listening to the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Souls.